relationships. One of the important things that you stated, Meg, was to look at what is missing. I'd love for you to flesh that out a bit.
So I want to recap, because this is a staged process for developing sufficient information and good relationships so we know what problem we're working with and we know what solutions stand a chance of working. So the first one is coming together in circle. It's known as cooling. I would say it's also calming, and it turns our human capacities, our frontal lobes, turns them back on. And after we listen carefully to each person, we move into the next stage, which is enrichment. And enrichment means we want to learn more about this issue from everyone there who represents difference, who comes from a different background, a different community, a different history, et cetera, because the difference is where all the good data, all the juicy information is, as we hear more and more from people, but not screaming at each other, simply sitting around a square or rectangular table with the physical embodiment that, yes, we are on different sides of this issue, and we honor that. The third stage is called magnetizing, and it starts with the realization it's a half circle. We're halfway there with what we need to know to really come up with good solutions. And so that other empty half of the circle, we want to fill it by asking the question, okay, who else should be here? Whose voice is missing? Whose experience do we not yet have? And that involves going out and, first of all, identifying those people and then inviting them into this process, okay? So it's called magnetizing because it's our openness, our welcome, our curiosity that draws people to us. Like, we're not inviting them in to solve the problem that we couldn't solve. We're not inviting them in to blame them or attack them. We're inviting them in because we genuinely need their contribution. So we're only halfway there. So then you complete the circle. I'll just keep going with this.
Okay. All right.
And then the last stage, which is the word that used to bother everyone, I don't think it does now, is compassionate destroying. And the image for that is a triangle. And we've got a firm base of understanding the issue. And then we come up to the apex. And within that tight little space, we want to define what needs to go, what needs to be destroyed.
You know, that part is really difficult, Meg. I want to say, like, just in my experience, my present experience, our team of people, we're strategizing a future for this work that's been around for 50 years. And I must say that I'm letting go of old ways of doing things is difficult. I have the habit. I've worked out a groove that is so innate to what I do now. And now I'm asked to, wait a minute, I need to let that one go. I need to destroy that pattern and establish a new pattern.
Only choose. This involves maximum discernment. After you and your staff or any team have gone through this process or some other one about who do we choose to be? What do we want to serve? And only then do you ask, what do we need to let go of? But you've got to be grounding this letting go time in a in the energy of, oh, we're going to create something new that's quite meaningful, and I can get behind that. So it's not, you know, it's at the end of a process. It's not at the beginning. I mean, we all share this. None of us want to change, really. We'd rather stay in comfort. But you would rather, above all else, have new dimensions succeed and continue yes. to offer to the world.
Right.
Then it's much easier to let go of just old habitual ways.
Right. To really keep in mind, what are we really going for here?
And what would disappear?
What would disappear?
If we went away. Now, I'm talking about something much deeper.
Okay.
What would happen? What would the world be like if there was no more new dimensions?
Right.
I always ask this in the past as a consultant. Of if we go away, what's lost to the world or what's lost to our community? And that's the question to first be in. And then you figure out what's keeping you back, what things are just habits or old ways of doing things, and they don't work.
Right.
So you have to create a much more meaningful context.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the last one, which is really the one that you added to the Buddhist pattern here,
yeah.
is pattern language. So that engages the human spirit. Can you talk about why you came up with pattern language and where that came from?
Well, pattern language is a direct quote. It was, okay, who developed it?
Christopher Alexander. I remember.
Fabulous.
I remember that book. I yep. remember getting that book, Pattern Language, as
That's
soon as I read it.
It woke us all up. We just adored it. And what its premise was that if you want to create a beautiful building, here are the patterns to embed in the architecture. Like there should be an entranceway before the front door. There should be light in a room coming from two sources. There should be, he had a whole list. He was a
brother. Yes, he did.
So many of my friends and I played with that. So what's pattern language for successful groups? And that's what I came up with many years later.
So if
you do these things, you will create a healthy, intelligent, cooperative, engaged group of people. So it's just digging deeper into how you create good groups. And there have been so many people.
Exactly. So, you know, in these times, we're very much in a period of being reactive and reacting to things rather than embracing something big and being more responsive.
The only thing that I want us to embrace
okay.
is being a warrior, a spiritual warrior for the human spirit. I want all of us in our work to be creating the conditions for people to be generous, creative, and kind. Those are innate to us. Those are innate. And I think those of us who still believe in people, and that's a stretch these days, but who have not lost sight of human capacity, human qualities, the things we love in other people when they're kind and compassionate and smart and respectful and caring, we need to create the conditions for more and more people to remember who they are. And that's most easily done on an island of sanity. But we're not all going to have that container. But it's in our everyday decisions of what to do or who to talk to. And it's in our everyday moments of when someone needs us, we just stop and we sit down and we say, I'm here. I'm listening. Talk to me. all ages of people, that works beautifully. So,
right.
But we have to be devoted to people, to the human spirit, really.
So what I hear, Meg, is that no matter how things come out, the outcome, we don't know what the outcome of all of this collapse is going to take us to. But you're saying to not be attached to the outcome and continue to do what is right and good for us to do with kindness, no matter what.
No matter what. And that's the experience of poor people everywhere who never had systems to support them, who suffered abuse and oppression. They still knew how to be together in ways that helped one another and also had moments of joy in them. I mean, you see this in the most impoverished, oppressed communities in the world. I've certainly experienced it firsthand in many places. And then, you know, what we're really up against, Justine, is a reinterpretation at the primal level of what is a meaningful life.
Yes.
It's not success. It's not professional success. It's not money. It's relationships.
Yes, yes. I just wrote an article called Joy is the Medicine, and you just mentioned joy. And it's like a practice that I'm doing is I'm remembering to breathe. I'm watching. I put a little bird feeder attached to the window in my office, and I look over and I see the little finches coming and chirping, and somehow it just reminds me of just the magnificence of being alive.
And oh, that is so good, so good. Yes, be grateful for life.
Yes.
And we have to help more of it come forward.
Right.
The people who are suffering the most.
Precisely, precisely. And I remember years ago, Alice Walker talking about if spring can come every year, each year, and all of its blossoms, then I can come forward with that enthusiasm for life.
That's
no
right.
Matter what, even in the midst of oppression and collapse, it's
yes.
We're going to go for it. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Margaret Wheatley. If you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, margaretwheatley.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Here with Margaret Wheatley. She is the author of Restoring Sanity, Practices to Awaken Generosity, Creativity, and Kindness. She is also the author of Who We Choose to Be. So both of those books are very relevant and important in these times. And we're talking about practices that keep us on an even keel in these tumultuous times.
Right. So everyone is saying this, go into nature, connect, realize that We're participants in a vast symphony of beings. And just let nature soothe you. Just talk to a tree. Just sit by a stream. Just look at a beautiful flower for several minutes and appreciate its beauty and thank it for its beauty. So, you know, every indigenous teacher or person will say, you know, we are just participants. We're a very important player because we have so much destructive power, but we are just a participant. And what I learned from one indigenous elder is that life is waiting for us to come back, welcoming us to return to our family of being. So there is no substitute for just letting your tired, frightened body and spirit go into the woods or go into a garden or go by rushing water and just be there.
Yes.
See if you feel welcomed. See if you feel comforted. And the more you consciously look for those signs of welcome and comfort, you will find them guaranteed, because life really wants us here and wants to comfort us. And then the second big thing is to find moments in relationship where you feel you've been fully present. And what that feels like for me usually is joy, satisfaction or joy, fullness. Like I really made a difference, or that was a beautiful conversation. And I learned from some theologian, I can't remember, might have been Richard Rohr, whom I adore, that joy is a consequence of being in communion. Being in communion with nature, I just described, being in communion with another person or a need. And what that means in communion is there's no boundedness. There's no boundary. My ego is not holding me back. I am simply here and present. And that works, you know, when I'm in my worst moments of despair, which occur every single day, I know that the best thing I could do to shift my energy and my feelings is to go and be helpful to somebody. Or if I'm too far gone even for that, then I take my dog for a walk. Other people are around small children. Yes, just go play with them.
Yes.
Just get out of your head.
Exactly.
And it's also getting out of our heart. But if we know how to come out of despair and sadness, then it's okay to go into it. So I will declare some mornings, okay, this is just my few hours to be despairing or to be rageful. And I just accept it as this is who showed up right now. This is who she's going to be. We'll just let her go at it. And then, of course, it doesn't last.
I mean, so can I say, like, we wouldn't say, I am in despair. You would say, despair is present.
Yes, I use the phrase, there is despair.
There is despair.
There is anger. But I'm talking about even preceding that. Like, I'm not going to blame myself for feeling enraged. I'm not going to say, well, you shouldn't feel this way, Meg. You know, look at all the goodness in your life. Well, I do feel this way.
Yes.
So let's recognize it. Let's externalize it. I mean, the importance of that shift is I am not rage. I am having an experience,
yes,
of rage. And then, so when you say there is and name the emotion, it's not your whole identity.
Meg, I know that you have a book. It's a book of poetry, Opening to the World as It Is, Poems of Experience. And sometimes poetry is the only thing that comforts
Definitely.
And I'd love for you to read one poem that I've kind of started. It's called Stars. If you could read that, to give a flavor of this book of poetry. Yeah.
There's all varieties of poems here. That's why it's called Poems of Experience. So they're poems when I encountered great sadness or tragedy, or poems when I wondered, are we paying attention? Poems of my experience in different places where I was so deeply moved. But this poem is based on my long-term experience since I was a child of communing with the heavens, just wanting to not only look up, but wanting to transport myself skyward. In places where air still offers clarity, stars sing a siren song from space in the bright night. Lying on soft earth, carried into sky by longings, humans respond to stars with questions. Why is the universe so vast? Why are we so small? Call and response through the night. My whole life, I have sent these questions into space and listened for a response. Then sky wakens and star song fades. Humans forget mystery and get on with living. But the stars keep calling. No response. Why is it that we call to stars only with science and insignificance? On the next bright night, find the clear air and ask again. Humans, ask again. Who are we? What is our place in mystery? Perhaps you will hear what I have heard, a song of inner radiance for the stars. The stars are calling, saying, we must turn to one another. Turn to one another and see, finally see, the stars everywhere.
So beautiful, so beautiful. It really moved me. And I could feel the idea in poetry. You talk about the dwelling mind rather than the analytical mind. So what is dwelling mind?
Dwelling mind is what we get into in contemplation. It's any time we stop thinking and analyzing and dissecting and categorizing and just let our minds play with the idea or the problem. Let just release all the need to know, need to figure it out, need to plan, and just put it in your mind and then go do something else that's relaxing, refreshing. Go outside and occasionally put the idea into your mind again, but not with a demand. It's just like, I'm thinking about this. This is a problem. This is my question. And then our minds, I believe, with other spirits and guidance, offer us insight, clarity. Sometimes it can be pretty soon, pretty quick. Sometimes it can be days or even weeks, but this is a way of working with our other levels of consciousness. It opens us to insight and intuition. It takes us out of the driving energy. I've got to figure this out and I've got to do it right now, which is our Western way of working. And if you go by, you know, if you can sit by a tree, you can sit by a stream, you can sit in a garden. Just let the, whatever you're dealing with, the question, the issue, the agony, the plan, just give it to your mind and see what happens.
And be open to noticing, just be to noticing what comes. I'm thinking, as you walk your dog, you may take the same path, but for the dog, everything is new. So allow that newness in.
Just be curious, welcome it when it appears, and very important, say thank you. Thank you.
Well, I want to say thank you to our conversation today. Meg, it's just marvelous to be with you and to hear the deepening that we can all do and the ground that we must go to find what we value most and participate with that with others and gather together. So I want to thank you. Margaret Wheatley is the author of many books. One of my favorite books is a very short book called Perseverance. I have this by my elbow all the time. Yes. I still refer to it.
And let me just say, if you go to my website and under Perseverance, all my books are listed. Under Perseverance, you can sign up to receive 14 weeks for free of 2 pages from Perseverance. 14 weeks every Sunday.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, thank you. And also I mentioned the book of poetry, Opening to the World as It Is, Poems of Experience, and also her newest book, Restoring Sanity, Practices to Awaken Generosity, Creativity, and Kindness in Ourselves and Our Organizations. Go to MargaretWheatley.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3338.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Tama Keeves, author of Learning to Trust Yourself. Next time on New Dimension.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
My mother is dyslexic. Sometimes the letters switch around. She failed grade 10 like any good artist does. She passed those jerkins down. She paints flowers, she saints punsets. Paints her pot when she bolds a hush. and she assured me I would ride my dog when I wasn't in a fush.